Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread and or stab ground cloth repeatedly with a needle to vent frustration.
Depending on the day.
Yes. Our guest this week, Jessica Cheney of Lyset Designs. Hi, Jessica.
Hello.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Doing some research, you have a scissor problem.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right.
Guilty. Yeah. Guilty.
Okay. One for me right there.
I mean, I'm just like an accessories gal in all walks of life. So, you know, whether it's like shoes or once I, you know, learned that needlepoint had accessories, I kind of went crazy with the scissors. So, yes, I love scissors.
Yeah. There's so many beautiful kinds. So, you know, understandable.
I know. I love this. I'm probably butchering this, but the Saju ones, they're my favorite. There's this pair of tortoiseshell ones that keep selling out like crazy at the shop. And I joke with customers that I've now become a scissor store, you know, just something esoteric because the demand for scissors is crazy. It's insane.
The mother of pearl ones are the ones that stood out for me. Those are gorgeous.
Oh, those are gorgeous. I mean, they're all so beautiful. And I just don't want to be, you know, the lady who has like 20 pairs of scissors. I think
there's the aesthetic thing that you're talking about, but there's nothing like when you find that one pair of scissors that just works really, really well and fits your hand. It's like the perfect tool, right? That's the best feeling in the world.
I mean, I think anything that adds to, I hate to say it, but like your practice of needlepoint, anything that makes stitching more enjoyable, why not indulge yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
For me, that's scissors and plenty of other things. Project bag, canvases, fibers.
Yeah, this whole project bag thing is really becoming quite a thing. A lot of people making them, and a lot of people, it's like, I can't start a project till I have a bag for it.
I know. It's crazy. I just recently did a blog post about what you need to start needlepoint and saying, you know, you really don't need that much. You just need canvas, fibers, scissors, and needles. And someone commented, well, what about a project bag? And looking back, I'm like, I guess that's necessary, a cute project bag. But no, it's so funny. People get very into their project bags too. I think there's just a whole section of accessories for needlepoint that has yet to be fully developed.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here, I'm laughing because I'm sitting in this little office room that I have, and right now my project bags, I do have a bag for like traveling, for taking a project somewhere, but my project bags are, when you buy, this is terrible, but this for me makes the most sense. You know when you buy a set of sheets in store and they come in these zipper bags, right?
They're waterproof.
They're waterproof. They have a zipper on them. They're clear, so you can see exactly what's in them. They fit, you know, depending on what size sheets they are, they fit like an 8.5 by 11 size chart. You can put all of your fibers in there. You can put, I have a lint roller in mine. I'm looking at it. And you can put them, like I have several projects going at once, and in a cabinet, I can just stand them all up. And I can see right through the bag which project is in which. So for me, they're the perfect thing. So we move into my house recently, and you know we buy some new sheets, which is a nice you know thing, new house, new sheets. Mm-hmm. And I stow all of these bags, and my husband's like, "Can we throw these away, please?" I'm like, "No, no,
not touch. Don't my project bags.
Don't touch those bags." He's like, "Why are you saving everything?" I'm like, "I'm not saving everything. Don't touch the
bags." I'm not a hoarder. I'm a needle pointer. Come on.
Exactly. There's a very big distinction between those two things. And Don't touch those bags.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of that whole story, though, is that you only have three projects going at once. I think that takes a lot of self-control. I am, like, just a spaz and have so many at once. Yeah. So I really admire you for that.
No, maybe three visible to my eyes as I'm looking in the room.
The rest
now.
Are in opaque project bags.
Correct. All right. But I'm telling you, those bags, I love those. So, but they're, you know, certainly they do not have the cachet of a cute little bag that you can carry with you to your stitching group and all that. You know, if I had to go out with my, you know, clear, you know, recycled, upcycled, you know, twin sheet bag, and right. I had to go to my little meetup group for stitching, I might put in something else. I will say that.
No, I think that people would actually like that, though, because I think the see-through factor, people really
That's
like.
That's what it is, because you can find things in it easily.
You can. You're not digging around like, oh, where's mm-hmm. that pink? Where's that blue? I don't know mm-hmm. where this is. Where are my scissors?
Yes. You know? And especially if you're going to buy nice scissors, you want to be able to look at them all the time.
I mean, yes, they're always framed on the wall. No, mm-hmm. they're being used.
I'm feeling so ghetto. My project bags are whatever whatever garbage bag or food storage bag fits the project. I'm really I gotta upgrade.
Just tell Marga when she buys sheets to save the bag. That's what it is.
I got to upgrade. Man, I'm just, yeah, I'm a sad case here.
Mm-hmm. It's
each their own, you know, as long as you enjoy doing it and you feel comfortable with your project bag, who cares?
I'll tell you what it is.
Comfortable with my garbage bag, yeah.
Yeah, are you comfortable with your garbage bag?
Yes, I am.
My grandparents grew up in the Depression, so I very much inherited their, and it's definitely nature and nurture, their sense of what can I use this thing that I have no need for. Oh. So there's never, you know, like I'm not going to say it's a hoarder tendency. We're not going to use that word. But there's always the idea that, you know, okay, I'm going to throw this thing away. What can I use it for? So is there some other thing I can use it for? I don't like, and for me, it's a little bit of it is, you know, here's a plastic thing. I have to throw it away. What can I use it for instead? You know, because I don't like throwing away plastic. So a little bit of it, well, maybe that's just me rationalizing, but I don't like throwing things away that I can reuse for something else. So for me, that's thing. And yeah, I do deny myself the ability to then buy cute bags, but. Oh, well.
Hey, okay, whatever works to each their own, you know.
Now, Jessica, first we got to know Lysette Designs. Where does that name come from?
So that was my great grandmother's name.
Okay.
And when I went to name my company, I originally thought about just naming it my name, Jessica Cheney, but I wanted it to be bigger than me, and so I started thinking about all these different names, and I was thinking of some names that weren't family names, and before I started the company, I sat down and kind of thought out what values I wanted my company to have, and it was a sense of fun, a sense of community, you know, a sense of honesty, creativity. And when I started naming all these values, I was sitting down with my mother and she said, oh, well, you know, that you're basically describing your great grandmother. Her name was Lysette. And obviously she had passed away when I was very young, around 4 or 5. And so I just love that name. And I thought that that was so interesting that those values were something that, you know, maybe subconsciously were passed down through the family, through this woman. And so I named the company after her.
That's neat. And plus, it's a beautiful name and not one you hear really at all.
No. And people mispronounce. I hear, like, are you Lachey? Lissette? Oh. And I'm like, no, it's Lysette. But it's definitely fun. I love it. I love that it's a family name.
Yeah, that's neat. Did she stitch?
She did. I think most women in my family needlepointed. My mom and my aunt are definitely the biggest needle pointers. My grandma did needle point a lot, but my mom is just an absolute, nut about it. Always needle pointing. And my aunt actually went to the Royal School of Needlepoint in London and still lives in London. So I come from very passionate needle pointers.
Okay, now see, Christine's going to say, all right, we got to hit her on the show, see, because she went there. So.
Oh. I have, so your bag envy, I have Royal School envy. Anytime that comes up, I immediately just, that's my bucket list is Royal
Oh.
School.
I mean, my too. My aunt just kind of found herself wanting to do it, and she just went to England, moved over there, and just did it, which I think is so cool. And eventually through that, she met her husband and ended up there, and now she does all this work with the churches there and volunteers and, does needlework, restoration and all this very, very cool stuff. She's an extremely talented woman.
Oh,
That's pretty
now for
neat.
sure we gotta have her.
Yeah, she's very, very cool. She's very cool. She actually worked at Needlepoint of Back Bay with Tracy Robinson, who owns Planet Earth Fiber and like does Pepper Pot fiber and all that. And when I
Those are some
casually,
fine threads there.
I know they're very nice. And so when I casually mentioned to my aunt that I wanted to start a needlepoint company and do a wholesale line of canvases, she immediately connected me with Tracy. And Tracy was kind of my mentor and got me started in all of this. And she was the one who taught me like basically everything about the back end of the needlepoint industry. Like I had already known about how retail worked because I worked at the point of it all during and after college. But Tracy was definitely the mentor for me in terms of getting in the stores and doing the wholesale end.
Okay, when we're done, gotta have her name, gotta have her contact information.
Yes,
Gotta
yes.
talk to your aunt, we gotta talk to Tracy. Yep, okay, two more guests.
Yes, they're two fabulous women, and not only because they're immensely talented and creative, but also because they believe in, empowering other entrepreneurs and bringing them into the industry so that the industry grows, which is what we need right now.
Yes, we do. Yes. Well, and your approach really is attracting, aimed at and attracts young people too. I mean, that's an orientation for you, right?
Yes, I mean, I studied marketing and fine arts in college, with an emphasis on watercolor painting, which is so funny. I never thought that I would be able to combine the two. Like, I never thought, oh, I'm gonna do needlepoint or end up where I am. But so when I started working at the point of it all, I started looking at like, okay, well, where is this on social media? Because I was in my early 20s at the time, and there was barely anything, out there. I think maybe the first was like Stitch Style, with Virginia and with Ginny, and that was really great and groundbreaking. But there wasn't any needlepoint shops or companies that were marketing themselves through social media to appeal to a younger audience. So I just saw this need for it and kind of grabbed the reins and went with it.
And talk about this, the point of it all. Was that like your summer job,
No.
your
So,
high school?
okay. So the point of it all, I went to George Washington University in DC, and the point of it all was my mom, it like nutty needlepointer, loves to needlepoint, always joked, except I don't really know if it was a joke, that she didn't want me to apply anywhere for college that didn't have a needlepoint shop near it. She was like, that
That's self-centered.
is,
That's not a joke. That's self-centered
yeah,
right there.
no
influence there at all.
No, exactly. She was like, no, this is about me. And so I was like, okay, whatever. So when we actually visited GW in DC, we went immediately to the point of it all. And I don't know if you've ever been there. She was like scoping it out, like, okay, can you go here? And it's a beautiful shop. The inside is all red and it's welcoming and they're always playing, like the Temptations or really fun music. And so I fell in love with it. My mom fell in love with it. So every time that she would come visit me while I was at college, she would go to the Point of It All. Well, eventually she just left her credit card on file there, which was very silly. So I had quite a few needlepoint projects finished there on her credit card, which was so bratty of me, but she got the bill and was like, mm-mm, this is not going to work. You need to go there and you need to work there and like pay for your needlepoint yourself. So she was trying to wean me off of my needlepoint habit and teach me to pay for it.
Yeah. And off of her card.
Exactly. Exactly. But I'm like, you taught me this. So I started working there like once a month on a Saturday, and then it turned into like once every week, you know, on Saturday. And then eventually Susan was having her second baby, and she asked me to manage the shop at, I think I was 23, which is an amazing opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had been, you know, a needle pointer, but I didn't know necessarily all the different fiber lines and the colors and the designers and managing a shop, just getting to know all that. I mean, it really just put me in the industry. And from there, when I became a designer, I knew what was lacking because I had worked in a shop and I knew what canvases we needed within the industry.
Well, that's a gigantic leap though, from, you know, being a needle pointer to understanding a business. You know, they're not the same thing. That's always the conceit, is that, you know, well, I know needlepoint and I've done, you know, all these canvases and I've stitched all these things, so I'll be able to run a business. A business is a totally different thing, and it almost doesn't matter what the business is. There's an entirely different skill set to running a shop. So, you know, that's a tremendous credit to doing just that.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. And I mean, seriously, Susan gave me like the opportunity of a lifetime just to dive in, you know, head first and just kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, geez, my first Christmas season finishing, woo, that was a learning experience for sure. But I mean, it was really the best. I mean, you learn things like, how often do you have to order fiber, or which fibers dye lots change the most, which artists get the canvas in on time, how long does finishing take? You just learn all these things that I think if you don't work at a shop, you wouldn't know. Like, I think if you're on the internet and you're just browsing, sure, you know different artists. But if you're in a shop, people will say, okay, I'm looking for this kind of flower, this breed of dog. And you have to be able to say, oh, well, you know, here's the Barbara Russell catalog, or here's the Jean Smith catalog, and be able to show them exactly what they're looking for. Because if you can't do that, you've lost a customer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially this day, when they have so many ways to find designers. Yeah, if you flinch at all, well, that's all right, I can find it somewhere else. And yeah,
exactly. But I think we can find designers online, but I think that if you're looking, sometimes you don't know where to look. I still think finding the best canvases is going to your local needlepoint shop, because when you shop there, they get to know you and your personality and your tastes. And I had customers that they would come in and I would say, you know you didn't ask me to, but I ordered this belt for you. And they would be so touched and they'd be like, oh my gosh, I love it. Of course I'm going to take it. Because you just know, you know what they like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I experienced that in Nashville. I was in one of the rooms and a couple of shop owners came in. They were partners and it was samplers. But they were going, well, so-and-so will like this, so we'll take one of these and two of these because these two people will like it. It was that same kind of thing. And I just kind of stood there just in awe of them, because they had a list, a mental list. They weren't looking at a piece of paper, a mental list of customers, and they knew that if they took these home, those customers would take those charts. And, you know, that really was a real good illustration of the power of on both sides, the retail owner and the customer, of what a local shop can be.
I mean, I think shopping online is great. And I think for millennials it helps because our hours aren't necessarily shop hours. So if I get off of work at 6 and then I go to a needlepoint store, they're going to be closed. They're not going to be open at 6:30. So I think we do need to have those online just websites, obviously, for needlepoints, so, or for, you know, the needle arts, so that they can get those supplies. But then we also need to supply them with weekend hours and classes at shops, and just get them into the shops more, because their working hours don't line up with the local needlepoint shop hours. That's, I think, the hardest thing right now.
I completely agree. That's one of the things that I struggle with here in New York. And, you know, we always laugh. I think New York would be just this mecca of, you know, just having everything available to you, which is typically the case. And I cannot find a needle workshop that is open, you know, except for, you know, an hour on Tuesdays when during the full moon. And, you know, even the stitch groups, you know, they're so far away, or they meet during the day, and and these are just like, you know, sort of informal stitch groups. And then the more formal, like things like EGA or ANG, any of the formal chapter type groups, which I was really excited about, a lot of them meet like at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday.
I know, it's crazy to me.
It's impossible. And I really want to participate so badly, and I absolutely can't because I kind of have a family to feed. So, but at the same time, there's no substitute to the texture of the fibers and being able to look at a painted canvas and see things that you wouldn't know you wanted until you actually saw them. Right.
And not to mention the feeling of a community and all that fun stuff. And I think as shop owners, and as I work towards opening my retail shop, that's something that I'm going to do, is on certain days, you know, be open later, or be open on the weekends during season, like Saturday, Sunday, because you have to fulfill those needs for your customer. And I think the worst thing that you can do is say you're open a little later and no one comes, great, then you learned a lesson, then don't stay open that day. But it's like, you just have to try to see if anyone's going to come.
Right. Like, even how nice would it be even just to have one night, a week, or one night every 2 weeks that is an open one, that's that you welcome a group in, almost like we have sip and paint things, to do like a sip and stitch event at your shop, right?
And that's what we're gonna do.
You just so get funny. People in, and you know, everybody has a nice beverage and gets to know each other, but you get people in your shop. But it's also you during hours where people are available.
Exactly. And I think too, then you get to meet other men and women who share the same love of needlepoint and the same values, because if you're making homemade stuff, I mean, you possess the value of empathy and creativity and all these things, and you're just almost naturally going to get along with most of the people in the room.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think in terms of just like finding a community too, that's so fun.
Yeah. And I think it's what you said earlier was correct, is it's, you almost end up alienating millennials just by choosing the hours that you do, right? Just by opening up hours that are not business hours, you open up an entire community of people that wouldn't otherwise be available, you know, or that they wouldn't be able to participate because they have to work.
Exactly. I mean, I have friends that are avid needle pointers, and they'll text me, oh, I'm missing, you know, I'm not eating lunch, I'm running to my local needlepoint shop to pick up, you know, a strand of vineyard silk. And I'm like, just eat, go on the weekend. I totally agree about the hours.
Well, that was one thing when Christine and I were doing the Marine Aquarium podcast, I read in an industry magazine, it was one of those, it was a list, how to make your aquarium store fail.
Yeah.
And item number one on the list was, be open when people are working.
Yeah.
And you know, that one has always stuck with me because exactly that. I cannot buy your product if I'm working.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because this is everyone's hobby. So it's not like, you know, and it's not like something where it's a big box store where they're everywhere where you can run out on your lunch hour. If your needlework store for me is an hour away, running out on my lunch hour isn't an option. So, you know, it has to be a destination. You know,
totally. I totally agree. Right there with you.
So when did we go from working at the point of it all to designing and painting canvases? How did that transition happen?
So I had signed on. My contract was for a year with the point of it all, and I grew up in South Florida, and I thought I could hack it up north in the winter. I hated it. Every winter, I was like, my toes are frozen. You know, I would cry like ice cold tears. It was just the worst. And so I moved back to Florida, and I originally thought about opening a
needle store.
It's
not that bad.
It's terrible when you're from Florida. It's the worst. I know. I'm such a weenie. But so I moved back, and I thought about opening a needlepoint store, but I was 24 at the time, and I was like, oh, this is so overwhelming. I'll never be able to do this, which I laugh about now. And so I thought, okay, well, I still want to be in the industry. You know, I love this industry. How can I contribute to it if I'm not owning a store? And I thought about what I would want a needlepoint. You know, I always loved these like cheeky sayings, and Stitch It's does a great job. And I think that there's some other designers that do a great job, but I kind of wanted to put a fun little spin on it. And so I just started thinking of things and designing. And I met with Tracy again from Planet Earth Fiber, and she kind of nudged me along. I think when you're getting started and when you have a dream, there's always that place in the back of your mind that's like, you can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it. And she kind of kept me on task and was like, okay, where is your design? Where is this? Where is that? And so she kind of pushed me along and guided me through the first few months of it and was just an amazing mentor. And so from there, I mean, she went so far, which is so generous, to even put little like a little announcement card in all of her shipments out of her fibers to the needlepoint stores about my new line of canvases. I mean, who does that? That was like the nicest thing ever.
That's gold.
Yeah, I know. It was unreal. And so then like Jill from Louise's Needleworks was the first store to place an order. And then, you know, needlepoint.com came and all these places came. And I think within the first month I was carried in over 20 stores, which is crazy. And now Lysette is carried in, I think, almost close to like 130. It's really grown in 2 years. So,
wow.
Yes, I know. So that helped. And, you know, she taught me all the ins. Like, I would have never known about Destination Dallas if Tracy hadn't told me to go and, you know, to join TNNA and all that stuff. Because when you're a manager of a shop, you don't know that. It's the wholesale side is completely different than owning a retail store.
Yeah. Yeah. So you started out with these sayings and designed and just painted using your watercolor art background and
yes. And then it just took off. And at the same time, I think what made Lysette very different and special is I spent a lot of time on my website and on social media and using that to engage a younger crowd and then get people who weren't needle pointers yet interested in needlepoint. And I think it was a month after I originally started this other blog, who's not at all a needlepoint blog or a needle arts blog, the Glam Pad, picked up my some of my images, and she contacted me, and I actually drove down to see her and taught her how to needlepoint. She's like this huge interior design blog. And then she wrote about needlepoint on her blog, and it just spread like wildfire. And all these people started being like, I love needlepoint. I haven't done it in ages. And, you know, fast forward 2 years and Lysette was on the back cover of House Beautiful. I mean, it just, completely just grows and grows and grows. But I think without social media and without a really good website, I would have never gotten to that point of having interior design blogs notice it and then having people want to start needlepointing. Because I think that's the biggest thing right now is getting people interested in needlepoint that haven't done it before.
Yeah, it carries a stigma with it that really isn't fair. And
it's not fair at all. It's like,
it's not accurate.
It's not, I mean, my cat's sitting at my feet right now, so I think some of it might be accurate. I do have a cat. I do needlepoint. But I mean, no, it's not. It's not. And it's kind of funny. And that's why I started using social media. I was like, listen, there's not, needlepoint is not pictures of cats in baskets. It's very fun. It's very fresh. And we don't just use wool now. You can use glitter and fuzzy stuff and all this fun, scrumptious fibers are out there. And I think just educating the masses on that has kind of removed the stigma.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be coming into its own. And I can't help but think, and I think we've talked about this in past shows, that the cell phone generation is starting to look up and look around and wonder, what else can I do with my time other than...
They're like, my thumbs are getting tired. No. I think you're completely right, Gary. I think that we're entering this age where we've had cell phones now for smartphones for 10 years, I think, around 10 years. And I think people are starting, you're right, to look up and say, okay, what else is there? And I think there's also a huge emphasis these days on self-care and mental health. And all the fiber arts are so meditative and so good for you in that regard that it really keeps you centered and calm. And I think that's something else that people are pushing now, and that's getting more people interested in needlepoint.
Yeah.
I think that's an excellent point.
Well, you experienced that, Christine. I mean, you've experienced that firsthand, that it really has helped you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I had lots of things happen, and needlepoint is always the way back, usually, And I think the other point that you raised, which I think is I never really thought about it this way. Cell phones are no longer novel, right? So they're a useful tool, and for us, they're just, a tool. But for kids especially, and my son is 15, and I'm sort of looking at it through his eyes in a way. He's grown up, they've always been there. So for us, it's like just having, I don't know, whatever, a toaster. It's just there. Oh. It's no longer novel. It's not interesting. So the next thing, for him, what's the next new interesting thing? He doesn't care about his phone. His phone is there. It's in his pocket. It's a tool to do something, to accomplish something. So he's moving on to what can I build, right? So I can appreciate the idea. And I think that's where the whole maker movement is coming from as well. That, now we've mastered this technology, is no longer novel or interesting because it's boring. Okay, great. Now we have this thing. Excite me another way. Give me something
totally.
Else.
And I think too, with phones and social media and technology, what you create, yes, it is there. Like it's tangible in the fact that you can hold it in your cell phone and hold it, hold your cell phone in your hand, but I don't think you're actually making something. And
no.
So it doesn't last. And so I think with needlepoint, knitting, all these different things, having that sense of accomplishment, like, wow, I did this. I think that that's huge. And people love that. I mean, I always say, if you just complete one needlepoint project, you're hooked, you're done. Like, goodbye, say goodbye to your bank account. You're going to be needlepointing the rest of your life.
Pretty much. Yeah, I agree. Because because then you have the metric of, at the end of the hour, what do you have to show for your time, right? If the hour was spent, lost in Facebook, you have nothing to show for that time. Whereas if you've been working on your needlepoint, even if you've been sitting there watching Netflix or doing whatever, I've stitched this whole area. I've finished this. I've got something to show for. This is what I did.
It's very dangerous though, because I use needlepoint as a procrastination tool. But now I'm like, yeah, but now I'm like, oh, it has to do with work, so that's fine.
Right.
But I totally agree with you that it is a sense of accomplishment, and you can see the progress. I mean, it really is like paint by threads, you know, just filling it in. And it does, it feels amazing when you finish a little bit. You're like, I am a genius. That is amazing.
Well, and I think it also opens a door for people who are not artists to, that you can't usually get some other way. You certainly can't get it drawing or painting unless you have a skill and or schooling. But you can pick up and create something as beautiful to look at with needle and thread and not have a lick of art sense at all. And that's...
Totally.
I would even just modify that and say that they're not artists yet.
They're not artists. I love that, because you can get a canvas and you can give two people the same canvas and they will finish it two totally different ways, given thread, you know, stitches, all these different things. It's just a guideline is basically what it is. And then you can elevate it and take it wherever you want it to go. I mean, I've seen canvases that are just completely different and you're like, what has happened here? It's beautiful, but you can just take it wherever. And I love that about needlepoint.
Talk about your trunk shows. Now, normal trunk show is ship a bunch of canvases to a place and 20% off for the next month and then ship them back. But do I read it right that you don't do it that way?
No. So I do that still. I do work with needlepoint stores still do ship them off my designs. But what I'm doing now is in an effort to get a younger crowd and attract people who aren't needlepointers yet, but will be needlepointers in the future, is I am traveling to all these different, they're mainly high-end home goods stores or high-end clothing stores, basically bringing my kits of needlepoint, and they're not just designs by Lysette, they're designs by tons of different artists, like, you know, Kate Dickerson, Rachel Donley, all those fun gals, and I kit them with the fibers, and it's not just, you know, the standard fibers. I put in fuzzy stuff and Krynek and Planet Earth and all these fun scrumptious things. And then I just package it all together and it's the price with the fiber and the canvas. And people will just come in and they'll just pick them up and go and stitch wherever they need to. And it's great. I mean, I think the best part about it is, and this is probably counterintuitive since I own a needlepoint store, is that it's not in a needlepoint store. I think a lot of new stitchers are very intimidated to walk into a needlepoint store because you walk in and there's so many canvases and so many fibers and it's almost like sensory overload, you know? And so I think by taking it out of that and just getting them hooked on this one canvas in this one place, once they take that first stitch, you know, they're down the rabbit hole. And so I think by just getting them to pick up a needle and thread, that's the biggest part.
I think that's an excellent point, because if I remember the first time I walked into a needlepoint shop as a new adult needlepointer, not having done it since I was a little kid, I felt exactly that. And I can be very, very shy. And I walked in and I did this probably to the first four shops, right? I walked in and looked around and was overwhelmed by all the things. And I was thrilled at all these things. And then walked around and didn't talk to anybody and didn't touch anything. And then walked out again because I was afraid to ask the wrong question. And I was afraid to say the wrong thing because, when you're surrounded by all of the things, you're immediately like, for me, I was immediately feeling like, okay, no matter what I say, it's going to be the wrong thing. I'm going to ask a question that's going to be like, you know, the stupidest thing ever. And so I'm better off just going, you know, to go get a dimensions kit at Michael's and start there. And that's kind of what I felt like I needed to do. And I was lucky enough to have, you know, mentors and guidance, you know, people that, you know, said, no, this is what you do. And then I was able to, you know, because sort of get over that little bit of social anxiety, and then now I can walk into a shop and I probably still won't talk to people because I'm very shy. But you know, I agree. I think it's overwhelming because you just don't know what to do because nothing's kit. Well, some things are kitted, right? And I think having small kits, I think helps too, because it's something that people can. It's a small point of entry, right? Yeah, if you have a small kit, it's not a big investment. You know, it's something that you can say, I can do that. I know I can do that, as opposed to, you know, a big, beautiful painted canvas that's, you know, an expensive piece that's for a more advanced person that's willing to invest that amount of money and time because they know that they're going to finish it because they already know they like it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I mean, just doing, how many trunk shows have I done now? 3. And I think I have like 6 or 7 more coming up. Just doing the 3 that I did in June, just watching. Granted, some, you know, experienced needlepointers did come in, but because it was just, you know, in this beautiful home goods shop, they were helping the needlepointers or the soon-to-be needlepointers, the novice mm-hmm. needlepointers, they were helping them and saying, no, this would be a good project for you or this or that, you know, and it was just really, I love seeing that. I love seeing the needlepointers helping each other. And I think that that happened because you were out of the needlepoint shop and you were just on the same playing field in terms of like, there are just these kits in front of you and that was your only option.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you're catching people that wouldn't, because why would you go into a needlepoint shop if you're not a needlepointer? You wouldn't. You just keep
exactly.
walking.
Right. Exactly. So we had people in New York just come in like off the streets. It was on the Upper East Side and they were just, you know, walking their dog and they would just stop in and say, oh my gosh, I haven't needlepointed in years. Mm-hmm. And then they would go home with a kit. And what's better than that? And right. then you know that they're going to finish that. And then they'll go to Annie's or somewhere in New York and
exactly.
then they'll keep going.
That's that whole remove it from the shop that sells it to get people interested. That's intriguing. Yeah.
It is intriguing. I don't think it's very well received by some shops. I mean, I think if someone did it in Palm Beach, I would be a little irked at first, but I'm not going there all the time. I'm just going there to get people into needlepoint. And I think once they're into needlepoint, then they'll start going to their local needlepoint shops because they'll feel like they can do this and they're accomplished. It's just honestly the hardest part about this industry is making people feel comfortable enough to enter it. It's very intimidating.
Right. You're building an audience. So if taking them out of the shop gets you 5 more needle pointers that are going to do additional pieces, you've accomplished something for them. So
exactly. For the industry. And what mm-hmm. we need right now is to get younger people involved.
Yeah, if I was a local store, I don't think I'd be irked. I think I'd be saying, Jessica, how can I help you do this?
Right.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah.
Right.
Well,
so
I mean,
what places, right? Where do people gather and where can I put kits that, you know, people wouldn't expect to see them or that would, you know, I think a home goods store is an excellent idea. Where would people be otherwise gathering that they would be interested in doing something like that?
Well, right. And then it was great because people were like, oh, this kit would look so nice next to this pillow
right.
that isn't needlepoint.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it was in this environment where you put needlepoint in your home. So having it at home good stores, it just naturally goes together.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't
right.
do it at like an auto dealership.
Right. Right. And what I love about that is that now they're purchasing things and they're investing their time into their home. So now you've got this whole, there's sort of a whole psychological element of it. So now it's not only the craft, but now they're investing their time into their home. So now that when they finish this piece, they've created something for their home. They automatically have an attachment for the piece because they've made it for a particular place in their home. So
exactly.
Now it has additional meaning and additional value. So mm-hmm. the next piece will be that much easier to, you know, to start.
Exactly. I mean, I always tell people that what you're creating with needlepoint is actually heirlooms. And mm-hmm. to approach it that way and teach people that it goes on past you. Like I have my mother's first needlepoint that she did in 7th grade or something. I mean, it is butt ugly. But I still have it. I love it.
Those are the best ones.
Exactly, because it was her first project. So I'm like, I'm going to keep this forever because it's so sentimental. And I think once you approach it like that, then people get really excited. I mean, that's why people do so many baby projects and things like that, because you're making heirlooms for the ones that you love.
So translate all this into the store that you're opening. How are you doing? You must be doing things different from your standard local needlework store to take advantage of these things.
Yes, I mean, it to a certain degree. I'm still doing it by the book. You know, I'm still only selling hand-painted canvases, and I try to bring in, you know, the bread and butter kind of fiber lines like silk and ivory and planet earth and pearl cotton and all these things. But with Lysette, what I'm doing, which I think is great, is I've actually invested a lot of my initial capital into interior design for the store. And so I'm interested in making the store feel like a home. I have couches and chairs everywhere. There's beautiful lighting. I searched forever for the perfect space. There's tons of natural light. I think that there's like 11 windows in all in the store. It's in a beautiful, you know, historic building from the 1930s. There's a courtyard out back with ivy where we're going to hold classes in the winter. I just want people to come in and feel like it's their home, and I want them to sit and stitch and be part of something and have that be their escape. That's what needlepoint is for all of us, is it's an escape, and I think we need our retail stores to mirror that.
So you've created the destination. You've created
Exactly.
the place where people can gather and have that community.
I mean, we'll see. That's the goal.
Well, but that fits, see, that fits with one of the magazines that I edit is Commercial Architecture. And I have talked to more than one successful architect. And when they talk about creating office space, it's that same concept. They really try to replicate a home, particularly for millennials, so that because they work, they'll work any kind of hour to get the job done, but then they also want those home-like things to give them the escape. And so what you're talking about is right in line with what these talented architects are doing with workspaces. Same kind of thing. And it's from all reports, it's working and working very well. And it's helped companies attract millennials, talented millennials, and do the hardest part, which is keep them. And
Exactly. Well, and I think in today's era, you look at retail and everyone's like, retail's failing, retail's failing. But what's failing are the big box chains because there's no sentimental, emotional attachment to them. And so, how do we create that emotional attachment? We make it feel like home, we create a community, we get people involved. And that's what I'm trying to do with Lysette, and through decorating it beautifully and carrying, you know, great designers and great fibers. It all goes into it.
I think it's an excellent plan. And it sounds like the kind of place where you would go, you know, you would plan to meet a friend. You know, let's go to the shop.
Oh, Lysette's the biggest pickup joint in town. It's kind of funny though. It's true. I mean, it's not true. It's like but for like friendships, my mom, just basically, I came home from my last trade show or trunk show, and my mom said, "Oh, guess what? I planned a stitching group for this Saturday." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So long story short, I just thought of all the people that were in town in South Florida at that time, which is not a lot because it's off season, and over 15 people ended up coming. And a lot of these women hadn't known each other before, and they were exchanging numbers, and some of them have gotten lunch since. So I think it is a great place to meet friends, and I want it to be that. I want it to have this kind of community hangout feel.
I love the courtyard thing. Wow.
I love the courtyard. That's what sold me on it. I was kind of like, because it had been a flower shop before. So when I looked at the space, I first walked in and it was a mess. And then they brought me to the courtyard and I was like, I'm sold. I will do whatever. And Yeah, the courtyard. I mean, everyone that I bring in, they're like, oh, all the windows, they're so beautiful. I love the space. I love the wallpaper, everything you put in. And then I bring them to the courtyard and they're like, how long can I stay?
What is the biggest challenge starting a store? I mean, we have so many threads available, so many designers. What is the biggest challenge?
Oh gosh, I don't know. There's so many and in so many different ways. There's so many. I think just being a business owner, there's so many challenges. Every single day is just a learning experience. But I think in terms of getting a store started, I think it's just giving yourself the patience or to start slow. Like you need to start slow. You can't just do it all at once. You know, I thought that I needed to order everything all at once, and people don't expect that. They expect you to build it. If you don't have something, it's probably because you haven't learned about it yet. Like I hadn't known about this really great designer, Jenny Henry, that I met when I was in Baltimore. I didn't really know about her designs, and now I know about them, and now I'm going to carry them at my store. I think that once you just start to treat it as a learning experience, then it becomes way easier. But opening a store is definitely difficult.
Oh, I'm sure it is. No doubt about
It
it.
is.
Yeah.
But it was made easier because I had managed the point of it all. So I knew about a lot of these things.
Yeah, but you're in a very seasonal part of the world too, so that adds that extra dimension.
I mean, yeah, you would think it was seasonal though, but it seems to be all the time. Like
Oh, is it?
I
Oh, great.
Yeah, I know. I went to leave the shop today and someone spotted me and came in at 5:30 and stayed for 45 minutes and bought some canvases. So, you know, I think it's seasonal, but I think there are people that are in Florida all the time. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out in this upcoming year when it opens up.
Now, is this coming up then will be your first winter season then?
Yes, wish me luck.
Well,
Yes. Yes, it will. I'm very excited. I'm excited and nervous just because last year I signed at the end of February my lease, and by March, I mean there wasn't even fibers hanging up, and all, you know, word had spread throughout Palm Beach that there was a needlepoint store, and people were literally knocking on the door, like, when are you opening? When are you opening? And I would look around and there were just like these white walls, and I'd be like, well, there's no fiber, there's no canvases yet.
That's
So,
not bad. That's not a
oh,
bad
it's
way to
not a,
start.
no, it's not a bad way to start. But I was like, oh, can you just give me some time?
Yeah, now it's a different kind of pressure.
Exactly.
Got people lined up at the door and I can't take money.
Exactly. I know. My mom was like, there are worse problems. Get your head on straight. I
Oh, we have to
was
talk to your mom. She sounds like she's a
like,
blast.
okay. She's a hoot. She is a hoot. Mama Lysette is what we call her.
Mama Lai said, okay.
Yeah. And it's gone to her head a little bit, which I think is so funny.
Uh-oh.
Like, because the company name is Lysette, and oftentimes people think that my name's Lysette, but my name's Jessica. And so I refer to my mom as Mama Lysette, because I just want to kind of protect her privacy and not have her name out there. And so now when she introduces herself to people, just like regular people, not even like at the needlepoint store, she'll be like, hi, I'm Mama Lysette. And they'll be like, what? Who's this? You know, I'm like, Mom, not
Sounds so
everyone's a
regal.
needlepointer. I know. She loves it. She's like, I'm Mama L. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've
Oh
created
no,
a
now
mom.
she's got a now she's got a whole thing going. Okay.
I
If she
know,
starts
but
a
she's the
clothing
best.
line, you're in trouble.
Oh my gosh, I know I'm in trouble.
Oh, that's great. No, it's and that's so fun to have your mother be as enthusiastic as you are. That's
Oh my
great.
gosh. I mean, I've been really lucky in that my family has supported me 100% of the way, and my friends too. I mean, owning your own business is really, really tough, and owning it in a very small niche market, I think, is even tougher. And luckily, my family has been there all the time, just being like, just give it one more day, just try harder. You're going to get there. Don't worry. It all works out in the end.
From everything I've ever heard, it's that can you tough it out that first couple of years? You just got to hang in there. And
Right.
yeah, and if you do it, if you set it up right and you're persistent, it'll come together, you know.
Totally. Totally.
Jessica, this has been a treat. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys. I loved
Yeah.
chatting with y'all.
What fun. And yes, best of luck here. Well,
We'll need
everybody,
updates.
everybody go.
Us?
Yeah. We'll need updates now as we go along here. That's right. For our
Yes. Well,
Wednesday
I'm going to
show.
go out and buy some sheets and get some new project bags.
There we go. I'm so ghetto. Jeez, I can't believe it. Yeah. All right, Jessica, thank you for the time, and it was a lot of fun. And thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.
Take care.